I need somebody. Help! Not just anybody. Help! You know I need someone. Help!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another award-winning episode of Real Recovery. I remember when we first started the show, we came to the station. We said we'd like to do a show and we'd like to call it Real Recovery. And they said, well, why don't we call it Temporary Programming? That was their idea.
I like that idea. It was good.
I'm glad they didn't talk us out of it. You know, George, I'm always delighted to be on the air with you. Sometimes I imagine you having a better personality, but most of the time I'm happy just with how you are.
And you're so kind to me every week. I keep coming back. One of the things we talked about last week is how Jesus shows up all the time. And for us on this show, what has happened to us is God has really ministered to us through our guests who come on that help our walk. We get to see and talk about miracles every week, Bill, and that never gets old for me.
Nor does it me as well. And now I just saw the construction going on for our seventh trophy case, because as an award-winning show, we don't know where to put the awards anymore. So they're building a seventh trophy case. It's made out of rosewood, which I know is a high-caliber wood. So I'm pleased to see that.
It humbles me every time we get another award.
It does me, too. And I hate to be hogging all the awards around here. But, you know, it is what it is, George.
Well, you got to go with what you're given, and we take it.
You know, George, tell our listeners a little bit about how we are expanding in year two of Real Recovery. Or would you like me to do that?
Well, we probably should have talked about this before, and I think we did. Where God is taking the show, we believe, is to include more people. We started off talking basically with people that had chemical dependency issues. And as you recall, Bill, we talk about Real Recovery being all Christians are in recovery because we come from an idolatrous past where we all want to make our decisions and be our own God. And we started off mostly with our guests, Alex and Bill, were people from chemical dependency backgrounds. And we believe that all sin is idolatry. And so if you're in recovery from chemical dependency, that's great. But if you don't have Jesus, that's still idolatry. Recovery without Jesus is still idolatry. And where we want to expand it this year, we believe all Christians are in recovery because we've all changed with the redemptive power of Jesus Christ from our past way of life. And if you don't have Jesus, you don't have recovery and you don't have life.
I agree with all that, George. You said that well.
Not bad from just coming off the golf course and vacation.
Month of basically just having a good time, having your little sabbatical.
Secret mission for the U.S. government, Bill.
Whatever you want to call it is fine with me. But as we talk to guests and people who have been involved in addictions, whether it be drugs, alcohol, sex, shopping, whatever, we find that so often they have bought into Satan's strategy, which is, as you know, he spends most of his time lobbying that God is not good and can't be trusted. And most people arrive at their own decisions about God based on emotions. And it often starts with, you know, the idea that if I'm not liking my circumstances in life, then maybe it is true about God. And that's how they come to these conclusions. So, you know, our special guest tonight, and we're going to be bringing him on the show in just a few minutes, has got a set of circumstances which are pretty amazing. And he leaned into God, didn't run away from him. And it's a great example of how circumstances in this story is going to hopefully be inspirational to people.
Oh, there's no question. I saw the video last night. It was great and good. Inspiring. Bill, this is very timely for all of us. I was talking to you before we went on air today. There's a funeral tomorrow for a friend of mine named John Osborne. And I met John. He was a volunteer through community Bible study down at the Salvation Army. And John had prostate cancer the last 10 years. I've known him the last two. And up till the week before he died, he continued to volunteer down there because, as he told me, the most important thing I can do is spend my life for Jesus. And he died with total serenity, peace, knowing where he was going to go because he made a decision a long time ago that his life was not his own. It's here to glorify Jesus. And that's the kind of topics we want to talk about on our show because that's the only thing that's really important.
Yeah, I agree. George, I think you said that well once again. I'm so impressed. That month off did you some good.
I'm going to take another one off. Yeah.
So, George, here we are clawing our way up the radio food chain. And, you know, I was listening to Jim's story a little bit, and I'm thinking our guest who's coming up in just a few minutes. And I would, for me, if that story was mine, I would wake up screaming and realize I wasn't even in bed. I mean, what he was faced with and what he had to go through is going to be really remarkable to our listeners to hear how, in fact, he leaned into Christ during all of the difficulties and hardships.
No question. And I like the honesty of where he started. I was a little scared at first because he was playing with cards and talked about being a magician. I have a friend who's a magician, and, you know, it gets boring after a while. I mean,
Wow.
Here, pick a card, any card. That gets old after a while.
Yeah, sometimes I wish you came with subtitles so I could really know what you were saying.
Can you make me disappear?
I don't know, George. I've tried that many times. But we are excited about finding, and I have some scriptures tonight, George, I want to share, because the Ephesians 1:7 says, "In him we have redemption through his blood, the forgiveness of sins, and according with the riches of God's grace." And, you know, the whole idea of redemption through blood, and, you know, just coming off of Easter, I'm reminded of the blood of Christ on the cross and how that was the price that was paid for the forgiveness of our sins. And blood is going to be a key part of tonight's story.
There's power in the blood, Bill.
There is power in the blood. And if I take a swing at you and there's blood, there's going to be more than...
power in that blood, too.
There's power in that blood, too. Yeah. Because I haven't seen you in a month, and it's nice to have you back
Thank you. It's nice to be back with you.
Mr. George P. Fraser, back in the studio.
And I want to really tell our listeners, I think tonight's story is going to be very fabulous for your walk with Jesus. So I can't wait to get to it.
Yeah. So I was looking, when I was watching some of the Bible and the History Channel, which I enjoyed, I was reminded that when we have difficulties in life, it was Christ who carried the cross. And then I remember the episode of Simon of Cyrene, who came alongside and helped carry Christ's cross. It wasn't his cross, it was Jesus' cross. And I just am reminded that every day that I've got difficulties and obstacles in my life, it's Christ who's carried the cross.
We forget that, don't we?
Yeah, we do. And I think it's cool that, you know, Simon of Cyrene, you know, that's kind of a cool little way of talking about stuff.
Where is Cyrene?
I don't know. I mean, I'd like to be referred to as Bill of Minneapolis, or you could be referred to as George of Unemployable.
I have many times.
You have.
I like George of Scottsdale.
Yeah, that's ringing a bell in your head, isn't it? But we are going to take a very short break. And when we come back, we've got Jim Monroe, our very special guest tonight. He's on the line. He is in Texas. And he'll be joining us in just a minute and telling his story. So we are very glad you've joined us tonight on Real Recovery. This is Bill Arnold with George Fraser. This is My Faith Radio. Welcome back to Real Recovery. According to recent polls, we are an award-winning show, although a real statistic might be more effective. This is Bill Arnold with George Fraser.
Hey, Bill.
You're looking stunned, George, which is not unusual for
you. Normal state.
Yep, that's
your
normal state.
Glad to be here.
Yep. Anyway, welcome back to Real Recovery. Tonight, we've got Jim Monroe on the phone. He is calling us from Texas. He has got an amazing story, and he's going to let it unfold tonight on Real Recovery. Hello, Jim.
Hey, you guys. How's it going? Thanks for having me on today. Appreciate it.
We're just glad you didn't hang up.
Yep. We're glad you're here.
We're always so grateful, aren't we, George?
We are. Gratitude's our attitude, Bill.
We go to break and we go, I wonder if he's still there.
You know, we've lost a few people in the past.
A few. So more than a few, George. And the Bill and George show does not last that long.
Canceled.
No. Anyway. So, Jim, we're incredibly fascinated with stories of hope and change, and we love the fact that you're willing to be so vulnerable about a part of your life which was, pretty dramatic, pretty traumatic.
Yeah. What's funny is that most people don't know the entire story. This is going to sound like a shameless plug, but, well, it is a plug. We just released a book about 2 weeks ago that Thomas Nelson is distributing. It's called The Charlatan. The Charlatan by Jim Monroe, and it's the whole story. We're going to concentrate probably today on the cancer part of it, but my closest, my parents divorced when I was young. My closest friend and partner, who I actually started a ministry with, this magic ministry with, he passed away potentially of a suicide. You know, my wife and I were on the rocks for months, literally about ready to call divorce attorneys. It was so bad. And then literally a year after my friend, my best friend and partner passed away, I got diagnosed with leukemia. So it's a Job-like tale, but it's real. And, I'm thankful that God's grace was sufficient enough to kind of get me through it, because I got to tell you, at a few points, I was cursing him. I was ticked. I was really mad. And, So anyway, but I imagine we're going to focus on the cancer part of the story on this show. Is that right?
I would like to, whatever God leads you, you know, we're real people with real problems on real recovery, because
we have
a real God, right, Phil?
Yeah. Don't use the word real so many times. You're starting to bug me with that.
Is that really bothering you?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I like about how you guys talk about it, because I you know, Christianity is not a fix-all for anybody. It's, you know, the Bible clearly states that in order to be more like Jesus, we have to die to ourselves. You know, Jesus didn't say, if the storms come. He said, when the storms come. And when you become a Christian, it's not like you just enter into this fa-la-la-la-la land where nothing happens. It's through the tests, it's through the trials that we learn to endure, and then we get life from those trials. And so I feel like that's what I'm hoping to encourage everybody who's listening to this today.
Hey, Jim, wouldn't you say that most of us Christians, when we're doing our Christian sales and marketing, though, would sort of want to say to people that life is really going to be good?
Yeah, and you know what's funny? I think that's maybe a big part of the reason why, you know, the next generation of Christians are leaving. The fastest growing philosophical movement in our country today, they're calling themselves the nuns, N-O-N-E-S, the nuns, meaning that they're not believing in anything. In fact, it's about 23% of all Americans claim that now. There were recently three congressmen and a couple governors who swore in not using the Bible because they called themselves nuns. Because really what's happening is, you know, we've westernized Christianity, and in one sense, it's almost become capitalistic. And it's kind of like, you know, you come to our thing, we make you feel good, make your problems go away. And then if you are to have problems, well, that's not Jesus's fault. That's just, you know, that's maybe because of your lack of faith or whatever. And so, to become a Christian means it's dirty, it's messy, it's death. You know, it's not, Paul said to live is Christ and to die is gain. And so the joy of being a Christian comes from the fact that we know that when we do go through the trial, that we will be lifted up in him, and it will be to his glory, you know. And being able to glorify something in your weakness, I think, is the most – that's pretty stinking amazing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's unbelievable.
So
that's why it says, you know, consider it joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials. That's the joy of it. So anyway, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just curious to have you answer the question. Give the listeners a little bit of a background as to your, you know, how you make your living and all of that. I mean, as a performer, when did you start performing?
I've been fascinated with illusion. I'll just call it illusion.
Okay.
Because it's not magic, but most people, you know, present day would call it magic. But I became fascinated with illusion when I was a kid. I was the kid with the Fisher Price, you know, magic set that I got 6 years old from my grandma, and it never, and my curiosity with it never stopped. And so every Christmas, every birthday, I was asking for more and more magic stuff until I finally got to a place where I, you know, could do things with cards. My mom made me play piano growing up. So that helped out dexterity-wise. I was also a pitcher. I played baseball. So I did a lot of things, but magic to me was always just that one thing that you could walk into a room and immediately have the entire room focused in and, you know, just enjoying the moment, you know, when it's done right. And so eventually in college, I got to a place where I got to be pretty good. And after I became a Christian in college, but I was more of a mental Christian. I was more of a Christian by philosophy, not by a heart change. I began to do things with a friend of mine on campus. He was my campus minister. We both were at the University of Texas, and we were trying to just talk to people about our worldview, and we found it the best way to do that was through card tricks. Because you get people to ask the question, you know, how did you do that? It's pure intellectual humility. It brings people down to a plane where it's like they're willing to ask and talk about questions. They don't have it all figured out. So that's how it kind of started. And then eventually those small card tricks on campuses turned into larger crowds, and larger crowds turned into a stage show, and the stage show kind of evolved, and then we got a Campus Crusade, or now is known as Crew, got involved, and now I do about 65 to 70 live stage shows a year in churches, high schools, college campuses, and even some corporate events all over the world.
Excellent. So as a performer, you're not eating sugar out of Dixie cups anymore as a diet, which is good. So you're one of the blessed and fortunate ones that make a living at it, so congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been a true blessing.
But, of course, being a performer, being on the road, you're going to always have lots of challenges and lots of, there's no routine to life, so to speak. You find yourself estranged from loved ones, constantly distracted. Am I saying that well?
I've got a beautiful wife of almost 10 years and two beautiful children. They're 7 and 6. But we travel as a team. I believe Jesus sent them out two by two for a reason. We have a 3-man team, soon to be a 4-man team. We're there together all the time, so we're kind of family on the road.
Okay.
But that kind of sets up some firewalls, I guess.
Yeah. So, Jim, give us an understanding of what happened the day you had swelling in the legs, or what was it?
Yep.
It was a pain in your – where did that originate? And
I was doing a show at the University of Maine, and at the time I was kind of arguing apologetically for the theological claims just because I found that they made the most sense. But my partner had just passed away, and so I was kind of bitter at God and trying to figure things out, but I still knew what I thought the truth was. But as I was doing this show, a really bad pain started in my right leg. It was pretty noticeable. I said before, I played baseball. I got drafted by the Tampa Bay Devil Rays. I knew what it felt like to be hurt or injured. But the pain I was experiencing was something I never felt before. So, I ended up getting home to Dallas, and my wife made me go to the ER. I didn't want to go. The reason why I was having pain was because the white blood cells inside of my bone marrow had literally exploded out of control. It was like a bomb. It's like a bomb went off my body. And the doctor came in and said, I don't really know how to tell you this, but you have leukemia. And not only do you have leukemia, you've got a very intense, rare form of leukemia. And long story short, he said, if you don't do anything, you're going to die in 2 months. And the only hope for you, really, he basically said, we can't cure you with the medicine in this hospital. It cannot be cured through chemotherapy or radiation. He said, you're going to need a bone marrow transplant to survive. I was pretty ticked. And in that moment, I really felt like, my God, why have you forsaken me moment? Like, I've done everything I know how to do to try and serve you, be a good person, love my wife, be this figurehead in these other people's lives, and now what is this all about, And so, that was a tough moment.
Weren't you just still being mad at God about the passing of your partner? Your business partner?
My partner, like I said, I almost got divorced, and I had cancer all within 12 months of each other. Yeah, I was pretty ticked. I mean, without saying the word on the air, it's in my book, though. I mean, I was just like, God, screw you. I'm out of here. I don't want any part of this anymore. This cannot be real. Because see, as a magician or as an illusionist magician, you're constantly playing that game. Anything that you think you see, you're always questioning. You're very skeptical by nature because you know that anything that appears miraculous, there's always some guy with, mechanical levers and colored smoke behind the scenes making it work. And at that point, I was like, man, this is just a figment of my imagination. I'm done with this whole thing, you know. And that's when it became very interesting, because this, as soon as I said that, literally the next day, this idea of a bone marrow transplant came into play. And for everybody listening, a bone marrow transplant is a substitution of perfect blood on someone else's behalf so that that person can live again. It's not a blood transfusion. People think of it as a blood transfusion. It's not. You literally have to go into an international database. At the time, the international database had 7 million people on it, and you have to find someone whose DNA matches yours close enough. So out of a 7 million person international database, they came back to me over the course of about 4 months, which meant, you know, rounds and rounds of chemo. I was dying a slow death. But they finally got back to me, and they said, out of those 7 million people, they said, there's just one perfect match for you. Just one. There's one person on planet Earth that they knew that they were willing to go through the procedure with. Because if you get anybody who has DNA, their immune system has a DNA that's kind of like yours, you can put it in your body, but your body will probably fight against it. And because there's a war that goes on between the old man and the new man. This is just, it's Bible, you know?
Yeah, no kidding.
But you literally have to kill off the old man so the new man can come in and settle in and become the new sheriff.
There's a lot of great symbolism here, isn't there?
Yeah.
I believe there is. It's literally.
Did you just take a sip of something, Jim? There's no break.
Yeah,
there's no water breaks on the show.
Sorry. It's crazy.
I wish I would have known that, because that changes things. So talk about a little bit about the donor. Was it a family member? Was it someone that you were related to? Or
no, that's another interesting part of the story. It's one I didn't get to share in the I Am Second video. Your whole life hinges upon finding this one person. And it takes time, and they kind of go through phases. They first tell you, you know, out of the 7 million, there's 16 potential matches. And they said, but we have to do further testing. We have to get these 16 potential matches into a clinic and test their blood again to measure their blood on a deeper level. And so that takes time. And so while this time is going by, you're stuck at a cancer hospital 9 hours a day getting chemotherapy and blood transfusions and things. Until finally they called and they said, out of those 16 people, there's one perfect match. It's pretty wild. I ended up getting to meet this one person. They told me on the phone, though, before I went in, they said, you know, the only thing we can tell you about this person, because they need to keep it anonymous, they need to keep all the information anonymous, because I still had a small chance of actually living. It was a 30% chance of living, even with the bone marrow transplant. They said, the only thing we can tell you about this person is that it's a 19-year-old girl. Which blew me away, that a 19-year-old girl would be strong enough and have enough value in her to realize how important her own life was. It confused me a little bit because, you know, they're pairing us at the DNA level. I was like, you guys know I'm a man, right?
Yeah. I just wondered how you threw a baseball after that. Anyway, Jim, we're going to take a very short break, and we're at rapt attention right now, because this is absolutely fascinating. We're going to take a very short break.
Go ahead and have some water.
Have some water. When we come back, we're going to hear more with Jim Monroe. You're listening to Real Recovery with Bill Arnold and George Frazier on Faith, My Faith Radio.
Frazier.
Was it Frazier?
Frazier.
Frazier. All right. Be back in just a minute. Thanks. Everybody, welcome back to Real Recovery. Bill Arnold with George Frazier. We are having a very interesting discussion tonight with Jim Monroe. Jim lives in Texas. He's a professional entertainer, illusionist, magician.
And always nice to have one of those on the show, Bill.
Yeah, it is, George. Anyway.
You know what was cool about the last segment is none of these things were going to be on my agenda. I wouldn't want my partner to die. I wouldn't want to find out I had cancer or leukemia. You know, when you get up in the morning, you're not thinking this is what's coming up today. And then I wouldn't want to think of the 7 million people available that there's possibly only one who has perfect blood that can help me.
Right.
Wouldn't choose any of this, would you?
No. No. And then there's a database of 7 million, narrows down to 14, narrows down to 1.
19-year-old girl.
19-year-old girl, and her blood is the only substitutionary blood that's going to save your life.
But there's only a 30% chance this is going to work. In the meantime, you're 9 hours at the hospital every day getting chemo and whatever.
George, if this was you, they'd narrow it down to one golden retriever that had bad breath.
Probably a yellow lab.
Yeah. Anyway, welcome back to the show. We're just kind of recapping what Jim is talking about and sharing his story. And, George, I think you had a question for Jim.
Well, I was just wondering, at a certain point, didn't you feel a little sorry for yourself?
I don't know if I felt sorry for myself. I was just more kicked. I was mad. I think anger was probably the best thing.
Who were you mad at?
I was mad at the situation. I was mad at God. You know, contrary to the public's opinion about what goes on in cancer hospitals, I mean, you know, the terminology that at least was presented to me was, man, you got to go get your boxing gloves on, like it's time to fight. And you need to kind of get a chip on your shoulder and get nasty. It's you or it's cancer. It's either either you're going to win or cancer's going to win, and that's it. Somebody's going to leave you dead. It's like going into it's a gladiatorial match.
I get that. You're playing for your life here.
Right.
You know, I work with guys all the time that talk about being mad at God, and I have been in certain points of my life. And at a certain point, we got to accept the fact that God's in control. You're not going to win that one. Fair?
Yes, it's fair. But here's the thing. I think he lets us be – I think it was for freedom that Christ set us free. And I think that he's okay with us being mad. It's one thing to – be upset and frustrated. It's another thing to walk away and to commit the only real sin, which is to blaspheme the Holy Spirit, which is to become so hard-hearted that you can't hear his voice anymore. that's not where I was at. I was just ticked. But then, you know, slowly, and this is what's so cool, is that even in the darkest hour, I mean, the really dark place, that place that, you know, probably some people that your radio show usually goes out to where it's just you and your thoughts and literally death in your room, like you can feel it. In that place, that's when he began to work a symphony. Like that's when I began to hear the symphony of what he was doing with my life. There I was, dead on a cancer table, could do nothing on my own strength or on my own accord to make myself well. That literally a cancer was eating at me on the inside that I couldn't control. And that literally the only hope that I had was that some person on planet Earth with blood perfect enough to match mine would be willing to substitute it on my behalf so I could live again. If that's not the gospel, then I don't know what is, you know.
That's a perfect illustration of the gospel in your real life.
When they told me that I was no longer, they gave me this news, you know, we found one when they told me I was no longer a cancer patient, but that I was going to be a bone marrow transplant patient. They said, now is when the hard part starts. I said, what do you mean? They said, well, now we've got to create chemo that the goal of which is not just to destroy the cancer, but is to kill you. We're going to make you like an AIDS patient. We're going to take your immune system down to zero. You're going to be kept alive by machines. Everybody that walks into your room is going to be wearing gloves and masks. You're literally going to be a bubble boy, because if even a bit of anything gets onto you, your immune system will not be able to deal with it, and you can die. I was in the hospital for 40 days. There's a number that's biblical, right? The first 10 of which was the worst chemo I've ever had, and on day 10, they brought this little bag of blood in my room. It was about a cup full. It was couriered from what I later found out was Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And I dripped that perfect blood into my IV. Before they did, though, they told my wife, they said, in the next hour, this is it. In the next hour, this blood, he's either going to receive and live, or his body's going to reject it and probably die on this table because he's so weak. So that first hour, they've got doctors and nurses by your bed just, you know, ready to do anything they can to reverse anything that happens to you. But there I was. I mean, I was shaking violently, but my body received that perfect blood, and it began to grow brand new life from scratch. The nurses celebrated my birthday, my new birthday in the room. April 23rd, 2009 was my new birthday. These Jewish doctors used to use these terms like, you know, you're like a baby inside the womb all over again. Literally, you've been born anew on April 23rd. It was my new birthday. The reason why that's interesting is because my natural birthday, my real birthday on my driver's license is April 20th. So literally, the difference between the old Jim and the new man was on the third day.
Wow.
On the third day, I was given new life after dying a death. And, I mean, the story gets even crazy. When they look at my blood today, when they actually check it and test it, they don't see me anymore. They see her. It's literally Galatians 2:20. No longer I who live, but someone else who lives on the inside of me. And the life that I live by faith in her system, not mine. And if that's not crazy enough, I actually got it. I got a chance to meet the girl. And that's not in the I'm Second video either because we didn't film it. It takes about a year. And there's a bunch of bureaucratic paperwork and everything. But 18 months later, I got to find out who it was. I invited her down to Texas, and she looked at me. She said, knowing that that was the most important thing that I had ever done with my 18 years of life, I went and got a tattoo to commemorate it. Now, I tell kids don't get tattoos, right? she got a tattoo. She said, I got a tattoo of a jigsaw puzzle piece on the very spot where they put the IV in my arm, knowing that I was the missing piece in someone else's life, and without me, that person wouldn't live. In the same way, I feel like Jesus walked into the room, and it was like he looked at Thomas, and he said, man, put your fingers in the spot where the blood flow out of, because that's how you got life. So as you can imagine, I don't have any more doubts about who Jesus claimed to be. And, you know, I'm just excited to share that with people. My show's taken on a completely new meaning. And that is that, you know, there's something going on behind the scenes of the existence that you experience every single day. But if you don't know what to look for, you'll never know what is really true. And we live our days in and out, just monotonous days, going from here to there. We're constantly distracted. The Bible says that Jesus wants to open the eyes of our hearts so that we can know what is the hope of our calling. There's something bigger. There's a greater story that's written, and it is a symphony that he's orchestrating as well. But if you don't know what to look for, you'll never be able to see it. So,
and that's kind of
in a nutshell.
Well, that's a great story. That's kind of the grand illusion, isn't it? That unless we have some life circumstances like you've had and a lot of other people we've had on the show, you can miss the big picture real easily, can't you?
Yeah, life circumstances teach us, you know. I've heard it said, there's passages all throughout Scripture that talk about, well, Paul talks about the thorn in his flesh, and he also talks, Philippians 1, he talks how to live is Christ and to die is gain, that literally by dying, there's something that you're gaining, you know. I leave behind that which is old. I press on for the upward call of Jesus Christ. I mean, you can't have life without death, and that's completely contrary to the Western culture like ours. Completely contrary.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a tough message to talk about, but I think it was G.K. Chesterton, or maybe it was Oswald Chambers, who said, now listen, if you're looking for a philosophy to kind of fix all your problems and kind of be happy-clappy the rest of your life, he's like, do not choose Christianity. So, you know, I don't know what else to say. I feel like that's, you know, the reason why there's a cross around our neck, or why people wear crosses around their neck, I mean, that was a symbol of torture, mm-hmm. you know? But what we need to understand is that if for every place that we choose to die, we choose to lay down, Christ resurrects it and redeems it greater, more powerfully than anything we ever thought possible before then. And so we actually get to share in his glory.
Jim, prior to your story, I was very impressed of a story I heard of a survivor of the Mumbai massacre at that restaurant at the Taj Hotel in about 2007 or 2008.
Oh, wow,
yeah. I don't know if you recall that, but terrorists came in and opened fire on a restaurant, killing virtually everybody in there, with the exception of one person who laid motionless on the floor because he was covered in the blood of somebody else. And he and he decided to lay there motionless because he knew he was covered with someone else's blood and that the terrorists might have mistaken that as being his blood. And I thought, well, what an interesting thing that the someone else's blood saved his life. But I used to think that was kind of a cool story until I met you.
I don't know, man. You know, my prayer from the very beginning was, God, you're going to have to make this so real to me that I can't ignore it. Because skeptical people, that doubt always creeps back in, you know. If you live kind of more of a, if you're a more logical person, it's easy to get kind of taken away by the debates of the day. But conviction rules over your intellect, you know. The mind will justify what the heart believes to be true. And no matter what, I mean, I just cannot ignore what's happened to me, you know.
It's a great story. I think we all struggle with delusion. In the world that I work in, it's the alcohol addiction recovery world, Jim, and people talk about denial. I don't think it's denial. I think it's delusion that the enemy, you know, focuses us on other things that are attractive. And when a life circumstance like this really comes to a head, it forces us to see the truth. And we're commanded to be born again. But the implication we forget there and miss a lot is that you have to die to yourself first. And and when this is facing us with a life-death issue, it really brings it home about what we need to do. It's a great story, a great testimony. Thank you.
Well, I think we all deal with selective reality. And, Jim, I'm kind of curious as to how you dealt with that. Choosing,
well, that's a good question.
Choosing what to make your reality each day and what to sort of live in denial about. I mean, don't people that go through cancer treatment, aren't they kind of confronted with that, where the doctor could say, well, this could work, it might work for 6 months, and then that could be it?
Yeah. I mean, you're forced to keep a positive attitude in the hospital because you don't really have another choice. But going back to reality, I think that's really interesting what you brought up, because I think that that's one of the big things that people miss about what Jesus does for us.
And that was Bill that brought that up.
Oh.
That brought up something interesting. I just think it's important for listeners to know that was Bill that brought something up interesting.
Good for you, Billy.
No, I'm just trying to.
Congratulate him, Jim. This is a Bill moment on the show.
What is really the problem that Jesus came to solve? You know, people say it's sin. Well, yeah, it was sin, but what is sin? You know, people want to say it's separation from God, blah, blah, blah. Really, the first evidence of sin was when... Do you guys remember what happened in the garden? What happens after Adam and Eve eat the apple or the fig or the fruit, whatever you want to call it?
You blame her.
Happened? Well, no, what happens right away?
Guess I can't remember. Bill, what happens right away?
Alex?
Alex, what do you got on this?
For 20 points, Alex, what do you got?
20 points, Alex.
Their eyes are opened.
They realize they're naked.
Yeah.
No. Their eyes were opened.
There you go.
Oh, we give it to Alex, 20.
Alex for 20.
But listen to this. This is cool. The first thing that happens when we fall into sin is that our eyes are opened to a different reality. You see, when Adam and Eve were walking in the garden, it wasn't that their eyes were closed. It wasn't that they were, like, you know, walking around hand in hand, and they were literally closing their eyes, and all of a sudden they ate the fruit, and they opened their eyes. No. You have two sets of eyes. You have a spiritual reality that's designed by God, for God, through God, and you have a natural reality that the enemy wants you to look and walk and feel through. And when they ate that fruit, their natural eyes were opened and the spiritual eyes were darkened, right? The eyes of their heart were darkened. They look at themselves. They see that they're naked. Their whole paradigm changes. It's literally like Neo coming out of the Matrix. Boom. They no longer see green. They see what it's everything changes, right?
Yeah.
So the problem that Jesus came to solve, you see all throughout Scripture. When he said the kingdom is here, what he was trying to say was, he's like, I am the way, I'm the truth, I'm the life. If you want to know the Father, receive me, and the eyes of your heart will be opened to a new reality. And so I think when we're talking to people who struggle with things, unless they get a version of the real reality of what it is, unless they have their eyes, unless they can see, they won't be able to fall through with it.
Mm-hmm.
Follow through with it. You know what I'm saying?
Yep. Jim, we're going to take a very short break. If you could just hold that thought, and we'll be back in just a second. We're going to have one more segment coming up with Jim Monroe, and you're listening to Road Recovery on Faith Radio. We'll be back in just a sec. Welcome back to Real Recovery. Bill Arnold, George Fraza. We are having a very interesting conversation tonight with Mr. Jim Monroe from Texas, performer, illusionist extraordinaire, who is telling us his amazing story of recovery from an incredibly difficult life situation, George.
A lot of life situations, Bill.
And despite all the frustration and anger, he leaned into Christ versus running away from him. There's only refuge in him. There's no refuge away from him.
Well said, Billy.
Well, say something else interesting, George.
That's all I got tonight. What I'm interested in, Jim, is we heard, you know, what was going on, what happened. What's your life like now?
Man, I have stepped into a place that I didn't even know existed. Yeah, here's another really interesting, weird fact. You know, the rabbi started his ministry at age 30. That was Jewish custom. That's why Jesus started his ministry at age 30, right? My ministry actually started the day I died because it was my 30th birthday. That was April 20th, my 30th birthday. My ministry actually began. And, I feel like I'm walking in something that I never dreamed of. It's a grace and a truth and a wisdom, and it's not me, it's totally him. But we're seeing things happen on these high school, college campuses and these different corporate events, different churches that I never thought possible. I mean, first of all, we're one of the single largest recruiters of bone marrow donors in the world right now. After our show, people have a chance to come up to a back table and sign up to save someone else's life. I've got a Facebook page that's chock full of kids who have been contacted to go save another person's life, which I think is really cool. But then also too, I mean, people are really resonating with the message, the spiritual message and content. And you know, that's what's happening. I mean, we're giving our life to share the message of the gospel, and then also to sign up as many people as we can to save other people's lives through bone marrow transplantation.
I'm not registered. How would I go about that?
You can go to bethematch.org, bethematch.org, or if you're fortunate enough to come to one of our shows, you can sign up for free there.
Fly me down. I'll do it. Be glad to do it. Warm climate.
George, quiet down.
Okay, sorry. I think that's a great way we can help out, Bill. I mean, it's an action that we can take. And
yeah, but they're going to have to sample your blood, and there's a needle in your arm, and you're not going to do that.
Oh, there is? There's a needle? Are you signed up, Bill?
No.
Okay.
They swab the inside of your cheek with a Q-tip to get you on the list.
Oh, okay.
How big's the Q-tip? This is something that we could do. And we can get it on our webpage about how to do it. I think that would be a great ministry opportunity for all of us. So you're going around now, and your life has a little bit more purpose than before, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, it's chock full of it. I mean, I don't even know how to explain the joy, you know, the crown of life, so to speak, that one receives after they endure. I'm walking in a peace and a fulfillment that I never thought possible. I feel like Lazarus, you know. I feel like I could die tomorrow and be the happiest man ever. Because the Lord literally rose me from the dead.
So, Jim, does it hang over your head every day, or that you could have this cancer return, or is the doctor pretty much saying this episode is something you can put behind you, or are you
pretty certain? They're pretty certain that I will not have leukemia, this kind of leukemia, ever again. I am more susceptible to other kinds of cancers in the future, mm-hmm. just because of the amount of chemotherapy I went through.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? Everybody, I mean, I'll tell everybody on your show, I mean, you're all going to die. It may be more of a reality for me, but every day you live, you should be living as if you were going to die of cancer tomorrow, because that's what causes us to maximize our hours, our time, you know. I think we have this really strange view of the world. everybody, oh, you know, I'll be 50, 60, 70 years old, and then maybe I'll get in a retirement home or whatever. That's not true. You could leave your building tonight and get in a car and get in a car crash. So I think you need to squeeze every drop of life out of every moment that you can.
I've always found that interesting when people have said to me, well, I'll be really happy when I'm in my 70s doing this. And I always think, well, what makes you think you're going to be in your 70s?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm happy to be 30. I turned 34 this month, so I'm happy to be 34.
Bill, I don't think our shtick would work well in our 70s. It's kind of a push now, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, it's not working very well right now, but...
You know, this is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. What I'm trying to do, and I'm about 20 years older than you are, Jim, is, and I'm in recovery, got a second chance at life, is really try to make my time matter for the Lord, not for George. And
right.
It sounds like you got that message loud and clear.
Yes, sir. I believe I do.
Why did you go golfing for a month in Arizona then?
God told me to, Bill, wise guy.
Yeah.
Do you golf, Jim?
I'm a hack. I like to hack. I don't know.
Yeah,
if I'm
I am
a
too. I'm a miniature golfer.
I mean, you.
I like to get a cart, caddy, do the whole thing.
You could have helped me out on that. I think what the point is, choose today whom you're going to serve, and we serve the Lord.
That's right.
Well, I am.
That's right, and really serve Him too. You know, I mean, I think we all say we do serve the Lord, but I mean, do we really? I mean, are we really doing it?
What a great question.
I don't think the fastest growing philosophical group in this country should be atheism, like it is if we're serving the Lord, if we're loving people as Jesus commanded us to love them. You know, I'll tell you, I spend most of my time on college campuses. I'm just, I mean, not to be a pessimist or anything like that, but this country's on a fast track to a European spiritual climate. And unless the church decides to get over themselves and rise up and do something about it, those churches of yours are going to be shopping malls just like they are in Berlin. And so I hope everybody takes that in love, but it's time to the church needs to rise up and do something because we are not winning.
What would be a good action step that our listeners could do that we could do to start, in your opinion?
I think you find ways to start conversations with the five people around you on your block. How many of you know your neighbors? Like, really know your neighbors? I mean, it's so funny. Like, I live in this house, and I don't know the person that lives next door to me. I'm ashamed to say that. I'm one of them. But like, how do you enter into a relationship, you know? You gotta make an effort. And so I think if everybody just started with their own street, we'd probably go a long way. I would also recommend everybody to get the My Hope with Billy Graham material. Billy Graham's doing a year-long evangelistic outreach through people's homes that you can sign up for at My Hope America with Billy Graham. It's a big evangelistic outreach for his 95th birthday. It's going to culminate on November 6th, which is his 95th birthday. So those are just a few things.
Yeah. Jim, I would like to remind our listeners of a couple of things. You've got a new book coming out. When is that coming out?
The book is out. It's called The Charlatan. Charlatan. It's out. You can get it on Amazon.com.
Okay.
Or actually, I prefer if you got it through iTunes because I don't like Amazon anymore.
Okay.
You get it through iTunes, and you can download it there, or you can buy it from like BarnesandNoble.com.
Excellent. And also, if listeners would like to see some of the videos that George and I have made reference to, one in particular that you're recommending is on the myhopewithbillygraham.org website.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
It's called Defining Moments.
And go to Defining Moments, and you can see a video of you sharing part of your story that you shared with us tonight. Is that right?
That's right, man.
Well, you know, we did something right tonight, George.
It took us a while, but we got there.
Yeah. Jim,
what a great story, Bill.
I was just going to say that, George.
Well, you should have been quicker.
Well, no, I mean, sometimes you're so annoying.
I work at it.
I know.
It's a lifestyle choice.
All right, everybody just delete what was just said. And let me start just by saying, you've been a fascinating guest tonight, Jim. Thank you so much for being part of the show.
I'm thankful to have been a part. I really appreciate you guys giving me a call. It was fun.
And your ministry has got a lot of future, and just the fact that you're living for the Lord and sharing your hope with others and telling everybody to become bone marrow donors. That's a very cool thing. So
it
thank
is
you.
Cool.
Thank you for putting your faith into action.
Yeah. If people get a chance, they can go to whatisthemaze.com. Whatisthemaze.com. The name of our ministry is called Maze Ministries.
Excellent.
Check it out.
All right. Thanks, Jim. Thank you so much for listening to Real Recovery tonight. We are so glad you joined us. Bill Arnold with George Fraser. We will see you next week. Good night, everyone. God bless.